Welcome to the Sunday morning podcast from Kingdom Faith Church in Horsham. This message is by Roger Green.
I'm Roger Green, and I've been actually scary. I've been part of this church for 30 years now. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so welcome everybody, and welcome everybody who's on the stream. I understand Burgess Hill and folks down in Worthing, so this is for you as well, and anybody else who might be working on this, who might be watching on the stream this morning. So thank you. Now, we're talking about the kingdom in the world of work, not just in the workplace, just to be clear about that. So Colin's already shared that scripture around Genesis 2:15. Even when we're in, quotes, retirement, we may be working. Even if we're unemployed or in a gap, we may be working. If we're working in voluntary services, we are working, we're serving. And that's the key that I want to really, that's the thing I really want to talk about this morning, is the world of work, not just the world of the workplace, albeit a lot of my experience and the story that I'm going to be sharing with you, or the stories that we're going to be talking about this morning, come from the world of work. So a little bit of a personal introduction. I guess I've been privileged to have leadership positions in public services, which, by the way, all of you and I pay for by our taxes, yeah? I've also worked in the commercial sector where I've been. I worked in the NHS for 27 years. I worked in the commercial sector as a co-owner and director of a consulting company for 18 years. And I've worked in, I'm now working in a charity as the bereavement support charity by the name of At a Loss, where I'm the deputy chief executive now. And of course, if you're thinking about the commercial work, some of you guys may have paid for that as well through the fees for service that you pay. Or in the voluntary world, you're paying it through your donations and the gifts. So there is a whole kind of integrated thing going on here about the cycle of money and finance and stewardship about all of those things as well. Now, I just want to give a quick shout out to my friends on. We have a group. I kind of call it a fellowship rather than a small group, called Ignite. And put your hand up if you're part of Ignite, or actually stand up, because I'll mention that a little bit later on. If you want to talk to these guys, we've been running this for about, I think it's about, Chris knows, is it 18 years? Yeah, and it's just, 18 years, right. And it's really a place where believers can get together and talk about the nature of their work, their business. They can talk to like-minded people. We can pray together. We give thanks for what's going on in our businesses or our work life. And we can share with one another, and we can encourage one another. Of course, the tech doesn't work when you really want it to, does it? But I'd also like to just say this. I mean, not only has Colin given a 5-minute summary about what I'm going to say, but it's felt like things have been building up to that. So you've had Dan. Where's Dan? Dan, wave to me, Dan. So Dan on stage this morning there playing the guitar. What was it, about 4 weeks ago at the end of the Freedom Course on the Sunday? You got up and you said, actually, the Freedom Course set you free from the mindset that you had about your work. Yeah? And you might remember that story where just, what was it, within 2 minutes of the deadline of submitting an application for a higher level leadership role. Because what his story, if you didn't heard it, was basically he saw his life as a bit, his work life as a bit of a drag on the family, yeah? But then the Lord just showed him through the Freedom Course just how important it is to be exercising his gift in that workplace, and that how he was called into those things. We had Kevin the other day, a few Sundays ago, Kevin Vanderpool, talking about the different ways in which we can access God, the different ways in which we relate to God, all of those different dimensions. So I was listening to that and I thought, well, I don't relate in that way, but I do relate in that way. That's the way I hear the Lord. That's the way he speaks to me. And that can be very different for other people. But the point of it is around the diversity, the wonderful diversity that God creates in his kingdom, that he doesn't want one size fits all. He doesn't want just these kind of little template Christians who work in a particular way, but actually people who bring different gifts and different approaches to their work. And then we had Simon Breakers, that prophetic word, which was about really don't underestimate the part you play. Don't underestimate the part you play. We had this thing we called self-limiting beliefs. Anybody come across that phrase before? Yeah. Self-limiting beliefs are the things that we've learned through life, or we've taught ourselves, or somebody's spoken to us about, where it kind of, you know, they've said, oh, you'll never make anything, or you can't do that, or actually, dare I say, the education system makes us think in a particular way about ourselves, and some of the gifts that we might have aren't necessarily encouraged in our education system. Creativity, for example, the kind of the arts, where have they gone? When we measure IQ on the basis of numeracy and verbal reasoning. Yeah, intelligence shows itself in lots of different ways, can show itself in incredibly different ways, very diverse ways. So I was going to put up first slide is Genesis 2:15, but you've already heard it, so we'll skip that one quickly. But the, as Colin was introducing there, the theology of work, oh, there it is. The theology of work is really very simple. So this was before the fall. This was God's design purposes for mankind, for human beings, to work the garden and to take care of it. So a stewardship role as well as a working role. So work that, you know, through the fall we might see as or might experience as toil. The toil is through the fall, but the work is a divine purpose that God has given us. And Colin also just touched there on that word abad, which is about the same word for work, worship, and service to God in the Hebrew. And the thing is that in most ancient civilizations, like Israel, Mesopotamia, Egypt, Greece, Rome, there was no clear separation between the sacred and the secular. Now, that could have its downsides as well, but, you know, because the king might be thought of godlike or whatever. So there are a bit, you know, one or two downsides to that kind of thing. But literally, really the separation between the sacred and the secular came through the Enlightenment in the sort of the 17th and 18th centuries. They're relatively recent man-made concepts. So everything is integrated. We were really interesting when Debbie and Steve got up, they talked about ministry and business. Did you notice that? That might have sounded to some like quite strange sort of partners in there, but they're not. They are completely connected in that integrated creation of God. So that separation of the sacred and the secular, it's made up. It's made up by humankind. It is not part of God's divine design. Can we go to the next slide, please? After that one. So I want to introduce you now to a book. I didn't write this, so I'm not promoting my own book, but it's a guy called Ken Robinson, who happens to be a contemporary Scouser of mine, but I've never actually met him, but I was really blessed by the fact that, you know, we went to very similar schools in Liverpool at broadly the same period. Anyway, this guy wrote a book called The Element. And what is The Element? It's there where natural talent meets your personal passion. When natural talent meets your personal passion. How many of you have ever had that day, at the end of a day of work, where you think, wow, I get paid for this. Yeah? Isn't that great? Isn't that a wonderful feeling? I get paid for this. I love this. That is where your natural talent and your passion, your personal passion, meet. But it has to be more than that as well. It has to be attitude, and there has to be something which is about opportunity to play into that too. But sometimes the opportunities find us when we're genuinely seeking. I can talk about that as the job I'm in at the moment. The job found me. I didn't look for the job. It was the pursuit of a particular passion for me, and the charity found me. And that just felt, how on earth did that happen? But it was that was the opportunity. Yeah. So let's go to the next slide. Well, before we do, actually, just go back. I would commend you to, if you can get hold of that, it's got some incredibly inspiring stories, mainly of people who completely failed in the education system or were disruptors in the education system and yet have turned out to have incredible careers. Lots of whom you would recognize and you would, have become inspirational figures in the world of arts, in the world of dance, in the world of television, etc. If we can go on to the next slide then, please. So what does the Bible tell us about how we are made? We're made in that diversity. We're not made on that single template. But I love this in Psalm 139. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And yet, sometimes we live in an environment or we've had the education that tells us, well, no, you're not wonderfully made. Because you don't fit the mold. You're other. You're something else. We need to deal with you as special. Well, no, we don't. What we need to do is find your gift. And somebody who can encourage your gift will see that gift. But we can also have those self-limiting beliefs that we have them, that are our mindsets that kind of capture what we think about ourselves. So we need to think, sometimes we just need that bit of a mind shift of our own to get rid of some of those self-limiting beliefs and actually believe this stuff, that I'm not made dysfunctional. Because the world sticks this label on me, that doesn't mean I'm not fearfully and wonderfully made. It's just I'm made a little bit different. It's that wonder of the diversity. Yeah. So next slide, please. Now, it might seem a little bit unusual. Has anybody ever been to Cordoba in southern Spain? No, really? Nobody's been to Cordoba in southern Spain. So this is a photograph of the cathedral in Cordoba in southern Spain. I first walked into this place in the 70s, actually, 1970s, and I was just overawed. I was utterly overwhelmed by the beauty and the mystery of this building, of these arches, like this forest of arches. You can see, yeah? Now, that building, you might say, well, that's a bit of an unusual design for a cathedral. If you're really interested, look at my thing. There are 856 columns made of jasper, onyx, marble, and granite. And you might say that's an unusual design for a cathedral. Well, the reason it's an unusual design for a cathedral is because it was built as a mosque. I don't think we've ever showed a photo of a mosque in Kingdom Faith before, have we? But that was built as a mosque. And, I mean, I'm in danger of going off on one in my kind of interest around the culture in Spain. But this mosque It's now known as the Mosque Cathedral, but it is actually a cathedral. And what they did, the Christians at the time, in 1236, for the historians amongst you, they put a cathedral bang in the middle of the what was then the mosque, but without walls. So it's sort of integrated. And over about 7 or 8 centuries, you'd actually got Muslims and Christians praying to their God in the same building. An incredible period of creativity and mutual tolerance amongst the Abrahamic faiths. But the overarching pattern in that is just, I just found it overwhelming. Beautifully overwhelming. But you won't be able to see it in that photograph. And while you see the kind of the uniform design of those double arches, the wonder of that, what you won't see is that each of the pillars are different. There's a different grain, there's a different pattern. Every single one of them is different. And that spoke to me. So the colour, the texture, the pattern of those pillars, and some of them, I mean, again, you won't pick it out here, but it's not an optical illusion. Some of them really are wonky. They're out of true. They would not be regarded as straight. But I spent several hours in there a couple of years ago, and I was like, isn't that your creation, Lord? That there's this overwhelming beauty of the kingdom of God and your creation, and yet what's holding it in place is the diversity and wonder of the different, the stones, the patterns, the nature of the stone. Each pillar is different. And that, for me, spoke really loudly. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So, by the way, sorry, at the bottom, if that, it says Exodus 3. It's not Exodus 3, it's Exodus 31. My bad, I kind of put that up. But it's Exodus 31, verses 2-6. Then the Lord said to Moses, "See, I have chosen Bezalel, son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, ability, and knowledge in all kinds of crafts, to make artistic designs for work in gold, silver, and bronze." And if you can move it on, please. "To cut and set stones, to work in wood, and to engage in all kinds of craftsmanship. Moreover, I've appointed Aholiab, son of Asimach? Does anybody know that pronunciation? Anyway, that'll do for now. Of the tribe of Dan, to help him. Also, I've given skill to all the craftsmen to make everything I have commanded you." Now, in Exodus, that follows from Exodus 25 to 30. What is there? It's God's design of the tent of meeting and the Ark of the Covenant, right? So God had set out the blueprint, the architecture, but to deliver it, to apply it, much as Colin was describing there in the introduction, it's the application of what we learn spiritually that is going on here. That the Lord has designed people, he's given people who had those skills, very special skills. So they're implementing the divine design, and it needs those skilled craftsmen. And that's you and me. That is you and me, each with our own gifts and our own talents. And again, a few weeks ago, Colin was talking from Nehemiah 3. And have you noticed that in Nehemiah 3, the walls are rebuilt by priests, goldsmiths, perfume makers, sons of district rulers, temple servants, and merchants. Now, today's equivalent would be what? IT workers, bus drivers, cleaners, joiners, till operators, whoever, whatever you might work in, that is that call, or it might be that call that God has given you, but it's your place in this design. So we are the equivalents today, and we might be doing that metaphorically, spiritually, rather than physically rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, but this is nonetheless true for us. And we had a life group, it was about 15 years ago, studying this scripture, and one of the guys turned to me and blessed me by saying, "And you, Roger, are going to be working until the age of 85. How many of you would be blessed by that? I was, actually. And some of the people who've really inspired me have done their best work in their 80s. So some of you might have heard me talk about being in my fourth career. And the encouragement here is, well, there's plenty more time for number five and maybe even number six beyond that. Who knows? Can we go to the next slide, please? But we're also social beings. And we're not meant to be working in isolation from other people. So we don't do our work in a vacuum. And interestingly, the word company, if you think of that in a commercial setting, comes from the Latin cum pane. Do you know what cum pane means? With bread. Sharing bread. That's the root of the word company in an organizational setting, in a commercial setting. Company is about fellowship. It's about working with others, sharing the bread. And the work, the environment in which we do our work, that really matters. And these are the places where we activate. Wherever you might be, quotes, working, remember I said earlier on, this is not necessarily about paid employment or in a workplace, but we are all workers. And this is where I do give a bit of a plug to my own book. And by the way, these are going to be for free. You can just pick up copies in the at the information desk at the end of it if you don't already have a copy. Just take one if you're interested, or you've already got a copy and you think somebody else might benefit, take another. Is that okay? So they're there as a gift. But there are a couple of things that I say in there. Well, there's more than a few things I say in there. So where Ken Robinson talks about the element, I talk about the sweet spot. The thing is that his book's sold way, way more than mine. So I'd go with his definition, it's fine. But one of the questions that I pose in there is, does your work serve an ethical purpose? We know from what Jesus said in Luke 6, no good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. That is the simple test. Now, lots of workplaces, businesses, organizations, you might not say they necessarily have an ethical purpose, but do you know what their purpose is? There are some that are obviously unethical. You know, if you're into, let's say, sex working, pornography, drug dealing, etc., clearly those enterprises are not, don't have an ethical purpose to them. But many have a neutral purpose. So you work in IT. IT is neutral. Don't think, you know, this isn't how is this serving God? You know, being a great programmer. Well, actually, it's the purpose, it's the entity, it's the organization, the purpose it serves that will determine whether or not that is ethical work, not that IT work itself. That is neutral, and there's lots of work that is neutral in that respect. So we tend to think sometimes of, you know, the ethically valid, the ethically worthy professions as, you know, medicine, nursing, social work, those kind of things, being a pastor of a church, all of that sort of stuff, that may be clearly ethical in its purpose. By the way, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be run on an ethical basis. And sadly, you know, when we look inside lots of the recent public inquiries, the post office scandal, the infected blood scandal, Grenfell Tower, all of those kind of things, Hillsborough, the people who are running ethical companies or ethical bodies or bodies that have an ethical purpose are not necessarily operating them in an ethical way, right? And that's where I come to the next slide, please. I'd ask the question, so what does the spirit of the workplace actually look like or taste like? You know how an organization feels. You can just go into the, enter a building sometimes, can't you? An office block or a hospital, and you can feel, ooh, I'm not quite comfortable here. There's something about the culture, something about the spirit of the place. Is it helpful? Is it serving? Is it good? Is it good? You know the tree by its fruit. So there's something about the ethics of the business, but there's also something about the spirit of the business. And that's an area where we can, so something about having the ethical business, if we think, well, actually my workplace, the company I work for, whoever, isn't ethical, then I have a choice whether or not I stay with that. Yeah? But even in those circumstances, you can still affect the spirit of the place simply by being there, being the salt and light that we are all called to be. And remember, salt and light don't speak, they just are. Light is. We can be those channels of light. So just ask yourselves a question. What does that spirit feel like? What is the spirit of the place I work? Does that feel right? I can affect that. I can be the person who affects that. That doesn't have to overwhelm me. I don't have to behave the way other people behave. I can work in a different way. I can be in a different way. And people notice those things. And if you can go to the next slide, please. And Colin's already done this one as well, but it's worth repeating. Because the third factor in that Ken Robinson book is about attitude, our attitude to our work. And Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. It is a matter of the heart. So how do we see our work? Are we up for that kind of conversion of the heart that Dan experienced? If we think our mindset may be wrong around our work. Now, I'm not saying that sometimes it is necessary just to do work and earn a living to put bread on the table, but that is a noble purpose in its own right if you're going to be raising a family and nurturing a family. That is a noble purpose in its own right. So when I talk about kind of the ethics of an organization, the purpose, does it serve a higher purpose? Can you justify it to serve a higher purpose? And I also encourage you to just think that seasons change. So I've talked about being in what I describe as career four, where suddenly I end up in a job that finds me that I wasn't looking for. And that's part of my personal experience. But those other parts of my career, I really loved and enjoyed. But there came a point where, just to use one illustration, I was a chief executive in the health service. And I'd been that for 12 years. I loved it. It was a privileged position to be in. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with my colleagues there to build, you know, a good health service in the area that we served. But there came a point where, if you like, the joy of the job and the drudge of the job just started to converge. And I saw it happening, and so I had to leave. I didn't want those points. I didn't want to become that guy who just becomes cynical, the cynical old lag who will, you know, just continue on running. I had to do something that would take me out of there. And I resigned that. I didn't know exactly what I was going to be doing, but I did. I knew broadly, and the Lord gave me the wisdom to kind of make the path and the transition across. And again, God was in that. But the point I'm making there is those seasons can change. And we can change our jobs and seemingly change our careers. But if we can go to the next slide, please. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'd nearly forgotten this one. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute, and falsely say all kinds of things against you because of me. Do not think that if you're working in your element and in that right place that God has put you, that it's going to be a walk in the park. It can be really, really, really hard work. Yeah? And it might feel on some occasions like, I want to run away from this. I really want to hide from it. I am not enjoying this. However, that this is where you kind of come back and you go back to that core purpose. What has God called me to do? So just be mindful that the seasons can change, the jobs can change, but actually the intrinsic purpose doesn't change. And I want to give you some example of that at the moment. So we've got that. Could we go next slide, please? And I'll run through these fairly quickly. But what does all this mean for the times we're in? So we a lot of people, you know, we talk about end times, the end of the age. But just remember that 2,000 years ago, the disciples were asking Jesus the same question in Matthew 24. What will be the signs of your coming and the end of the age? And what did he say? In Matthew 24, 36, he says, no one knows about the day of the hour, nor even the angels in heaven, not the Son, but only the Father. The key is about being ready. Yeah. It's always about being ready. Yeah. We won't go through all of this from Luke 19, 12 to, I think it's 12 to 26, but you get the parable of the miners, the parable of the talents, the virgins and the lamps. It's all about being ready. Yeah. And I love particularly the parable of the talents, the parable of the miners, because they give me a glimpse of what it's going to be like after Jesus comes again. There will still be work to do. Yeah. But the reward will be there for those who've used and invested the gifts that the Lord has given them in this life. So the key is actually about being ready. So what do we do with all this stuff? And again, just a quick shout out to the guys in Ignite. Stand up again, please. So if you want to, you know, join in that kind of conversation, look around you, a group where we are praying together. We talk together. We chat together about the kind of challenges that we will all experience. But we also talk about how we're thankful for what God's doing, the gift that he's given to us. And many of these guys, you will get through the conversation with them, just how they have that. They've kind of answered this next question I'm going to be posing to you. Thank you. Just if you want to have a conversation with them or with me later on, please feel free. But the next slide, please. What I want you to do is just think about this phrase, my work honors God by. My work honors God by. Now, I'm not going to get you to workshop it now or turn to your neighbour and, you know, write it all down, or we won't do any ministry time around that. But I'd like you to hold that question in mind, because it's something to pray through, think through, work through, chat through. And I'll give you an example, which is, must admit, feels a bit exposing for me to say this. Next slide, please. But this is what I would say. My work honours God by helping people see beyond their circumstances and lead a flourishing life. That's what I want to do. That's what God has given me. And I can apply that in any of those situations in my career, those different seasons that I've gone through, where I said earlier, you hold on to what is that call? What's that divine spark the Lord has given you? Okay, so I just encourage you to pray, chat, or kind of refine that, think about that, spend time over it, but please don't ignore it. Many of you, I think, already know it. So I'm not suggesting that people don't know, but if you haven't felt that, please spend time to consider. And that is your application. That's you bringing your passion, your talent, with the right attitude into the application in the kingdom of God. And I won't spend time now, but you can read in my book, you know, how on earth did that happen? That's a genuine question. How on earth did that happen? Where I saw God just work impossible things and turn things round. And as you might expect, I'd got all the kind of business management training that you could throw at anybody. And yet the solutions that he was giving me constantly were prophetic. They were completely against anything that you would ever read of in a business manual. But I will finish there, because I did promise Chris when we went out the other night, I was actually going to finish on time. Look at that, it's 11:29.
Thank you for listening to this Kingdom Faith podcast. We trust it's been an encouragement to you. For more information and resources from Kingdom Faith and our other audio and video podcasts, please visit www.kingdomfaith.com.